Hi folks, Vossie here. Hope you're having a great weekend. This is a special Saturday edition of Breakfast with Vossie with some of the best bits from the weekday show. And on today's weekend edition, we have the well-travelled cricketer, Sydney Thunder's Chris Green. Wait till you hear some of the places he has played 2020 cricket. Steve Richards with the Bathurst 1000 on this weekend. Steve won the race 5 times in his career. Dad Jim won it 7 times. What a story. Brian Gorjan, the Boomers bronze medal winning coach and Hawks coach, the NBL, is back. Channel 9 presenter Cameron Williams playing the role of all-rounder, dealing with some of the big stories of the sporting week and giving his opinion. But first up, former fast bowler Brett Lee, a member of the Fox cricket commentary team. The Ashes is just around the corner. In fact, it begins on Wednesday. Well, we've had him on the program before. We love having him on the show. He is an integral part of the Fox cricket coverage, and Foxtel is Australia's only dedicated sport 4K Ultra HD channel. And, of course, the Ashes in 4K Ultra HD. Is there any other way to watch? You'll feel like you're there. And this top 100 moments, that's really got me going. And, in fact, that might be my start point with Brett. Welcome back to the program, Brett.
Morning, Bossy. How's things?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty big task, actually. Oh, no, it's not a big task. It's a humongous task to come up with a list of 100. I've just thrown out to my listeners. I said, can you come back tomorrow? They might need all weekend. But even your first wicket on debut is pretty clear in my mind. Remember that one, that full toss, the Beamer? That's a great moment.
Well, if I'm picking it, mate, I definitely cannot be in it. But, look, it's been a challenging but a very, very exciting time with my fellow sort of Fox commentators. So trying to work out what is exactly going to be the greatest or the 100 great Aussie cricket memories or moments, in cricket history. So we think we've got pretty close. We've come up with 100. And then I guess now it's over to the cricket lovers, the cricket expert, the cricket nuffies to vote what they think is the best one.
Yeah, wow. It's so many coming flooding to me. See, I can remember, the test where Tomo was batting with Alan Border and the juggling catch and the slips for England, and Australia versus the West Indies,
right,
when Craig McDermott was batting and he didn't think he was out, and all those moments. I think the Gatting ball, Warney's ball to get Gatting's going to be hard to beat, but then Steve
93,
Ward
yeah,
a ton. Gee, clear in your head, if I said to you, and I won't get you to commit because I don't want you to sway the voting, but would you have a clear cut 3, 4, 5, 10 in your own head?
Look, I do. I've actually picked out, I've earmarked 3, which I guess pretty close to my heart. Growing up, obviously watching that era, you can go back to, 1877, you can go back right back to Charles Betterman at the MCG. Yeah. But in terms of what I've seen, I would have to go 93, Warney's, first ball on English soil to Mike Gatting. Mm. The ball, you could hear the fizz on the ball, the way it spun, ripped his off stump. I mean, Gatting had zero clue as to where the ball was going. You fast forward, then you'd go to 2003, and I'd have to say Steve Waugh under pressure at the SCG against the Poms. To get that 100 off the last ball to, go past 10,000 runs to, equal Don Bradman's record of 29 centuries. The reason why that was so good to me was, batting under pressure, but also to, his partnership with Gilly. I was next in the bat, so I'm thinking, geez, if Gilly runs him out here or something happens, or I have to go in and bat with Steve Waugh, the Australian public could hate me. But that moment, and my third one would have to be at the G, Warney, 2006, I reckon it was, his 700th test wicket where he bowled, the captain, Andrew Strauss, through the gate. I mean, 700 test wickets is phenomenal. I've picked 3 out of 100, but on any given day, you could sway your vote either way. There's so many great memories and moments.
Yeah. Look, I'll throw a couple more. So this is, we might be on for the next 2 hours. Sorry to Matt White's program, you're bumped. We're just going to talk about, see, Dougie Walter's 100 in a session. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember that. But I'll tell you a moment an image that stays with you when you talk about defiance and bravery. It's Rick McCosker. It's the centenary test. Coming back in the second innings, jaw broken with the bandage wrapped around the face, no helmet, just in the cap. I mean, that's it. Like, that's an extraordinary moment. Not for the greatness of the, achievement as far as a great wicket or whatever, but just the moment of seeing him walk out for the second innings in the centenary test, having had his jaw broken in the first innings. It was
100%.
Incredible.
Well, what that does capture is that great Aussie spirit, you know, that never say die attitude that started many, many years ago, was revamped by, I guess, the captaincy of Alan Border. But it's that great Aussie spirit, isn't it, where, you know, you think you're down and out. I mean, to have your jaw broken, to have it taped back up, it looked pretty silly when he came out the bat, but I tell you what, it was effective.
That's right, yeah. But I don't know, look, medically past that, was the bandaging, who took that on him?
Well, exactly, but as we've had over the last, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, we've combined 3, 4, 5 different moments where we believe they could be in the top 100. So, you know, you can imagine trying to pick a 100, but that's the thing. So every different moment in this 100 can appeal to someone else, and it's the moment that they've seen on television or the highlights or they're actually at the ground. So it's got to get a lot of people talking. I know that, already people are sort of destined to sort of put their best moment forward. But, yeah, there's been so many.
Well, that is Foxtel's Ton of Cricket campaign. By the way, if you weren't aware, Brett, today is the anniversary. On this day, 1932, the first day of Bodyline. Stan McCabe got a big unbeaten 100 on the first day of Bodyline. So there you go. There's a famous moment. I don't know how you actually say great single moment or you just call the series a moment, being so famous as it is. Now, while I have you, Brett, last time I had you on, you were very black and white with your answers and where you stood in terms of captaincy and all sorts of things and around Dave Warner started, how right you were about the T20 World Cup. Boy, oh boy, we should have listened right there to ever doubt Dave Warner, player of the tournament. Are you comfortable with all the decisions it would be? I'll throw them at you. Alex Carey ahead of Josh Inglis as keeper?
I think so. I think so, Vossi, only because he's got the experience. You don't want to go into an Ashes series with a new blooded captain, a new blooded keeper, no one that's had experience at that level. So I think Alex Carey, playing for Australian white ball cricket, coming off a 50-over 100, form on the board, 30 years of age, he is the obvious choice. So, yes, Carey behind the stumps.
Okay, number 5 in the batting order. Is it Head? Is it Khawaja?
I'm going to go with Khawaja. I said Khawaja a couple of months ago. Travis Head, look, he's a phenomenal cricketer and can definitely play a huge part, you know, for Australia moving forward. I just think, once again, with that experience of Khawaja, with his temperament, being a left-hander, he's got a lot to offer, and I think that he's probably just nudging in front of Head. I mean, obviously, Head, with his technique and being a lefty as well, is a brilliant cricketer. I'm just going to go with Khawaja with that experience.
Okay, and Brett Lee being a great fast bowler of our time, we will value your opinion on this one. The fast bowling lineup for next Wednesday, is it Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood? Does Jai Richardson get a start? What's your thoughts?
I'm going with the trio of Pat Cummins, obviously skipper. I'm going with Josh Hazelwood, definitely two of the first pick. That I'm going to go Mitchell Stark. I think Starkey, I keep using that word experience, but, you know, you need experience when you're playing in such a big series. Look, Mitchell Stark, I think, has got the right to take the new ball for Australia. A lot of people are calling for his head on the chopping block. I'm not going down that road. I'm going to say Mitchell Stark can produce, you know, an incredible Ashes series. If he can get the ball to swing back at 150 km, which he's very, very capable of, he's not past his best. I'm going to go Mitchell Stark. I'm going to back him like I back David Warner. If I'm wrong and he doesn't perform in the first couple of tests, well, fair enough. But I just back Mitchell Stark. I know what I'd rather face. You know, would I rather face 135 km seam up, or would I rather face 150 km the ball to rip my front pad off? I know what I'd rather face. It's not 150 km.
Beautifully put. Hey, listen, obviously Ashes is his main focus right here, but we do have the Big Bash League starting this weekend as well. Have you got a prediction? Can I lock you in for a prediction then? This is without notice. I lock you. We're playing the BBL Supercoach as well. So Tom Sangster's come on and said, look, when in doubt, pick a Sixers player off the top. And you know, there's some great promise there. But have you got a prediction for the Big Bash League?
I'll give you two predictions here, Vossi. How's this? So I do bleed magenta, as everyone knows. I'm going to go back-to-back titles for the Sydney Sixers, and I'm going to go back-to-back player of the series for Josh Phillippe. So Josh Phillippe to have a cracker of a series and the Sixers to win. And keeping in mind, too, Josh Phillippe, even though that he won't get the nod probably today or tomorrow, but he's definitely in the mix as well moving forward at 24, I think, years of age for Australia behind the stumps at some stage.
All righty. Our stocks are well, are looking good there. By the way, if you're not aware, and you mightn't play Supercoach, but he is the number one picked player. He's number one, and that's with good reason, and you've now backed it up. You'll have even more people slotting him into their team today or making a late change. Brett, really, really value your opinion. You always come on enthusiastic and so emphatic and so clear-cut in your views. You're a master performer now in the media, and may I say, I can't wait to see what you come up with a ton of cricket campaign on Foxtel.
It's exciting, and, yeah, looking forward to a massive summer. So the boys on Fox will try and obviously the girls as well will try and bring our best coverage and have a lot of fun doing it. So thanks, Vossi.
Good on you, Brett. Thanks for coming on the program. The one and only Brett Lee and Foxtel, the only place to watch every ball of the Vodafone Ashes series in 4K Ultra HD.
You're listening to the best of Vossi.
It is a real privilege. I always say, you know, we get to speak to so many great sports people, so many great achievers. Stephen Richards is a great achiever. The Richards name, synonymous with Bathurst. Jim holds the record for the most number of starts in the Bathurst 1000, 35. Won the race on no less than 7 occasions, and then Stephen able to win it on 5 times. That in itself is a great story, a father and son winning between them 12 times our great race. Stephen Richards has been good enough to join us early hours of this morning. Stephen, good morning to you. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good morning, Vossi. How are you, mate? That was a pretty good picture you painted on what Bathurst means to the sporting public of Australia, I reckon.
Yeah, well, look, I mean that. You don't have to be a motor racing fan. I suppose you could draw a comparison with the Melbourne Cup. You might not follow racing all year, but you buy into the Melbourne Cup.
Yep.
And I think the Bathurst 1000 is the same. And, you know, the names. It does create legends. It's so drama-filled every single year.
Well, I mean, it's a huge event, and it's really probably now sort of 60 years on. It really has created the Australian motorsport landscape for us. You know, we all go car racing because what Bathurst means to everyone, not just the drivers, but the fans as well. So I think you're absolutely right.
Can I tell you, as a kid, it'd be, you know, you'd pull out the Scalectrics track this time of year, or you'd pull out the Matchbox cars, you'd get the pencils out and make a little racetrack. That's as a little kid. I have memories of that, of doing that as a kid, that's the impact it had on you. And you'd text the cars on the top of the Matchbox cars, you'd write the number, and there would be an 05 and all those sorts of things. So
yep.
I reckon I'm not alone in having that. Now, I want to take you back. And look, I've been in the position where I've spoken to many sportsmen, like, you know, rugby league players. You say, do you remember that first grand final? Do you remember vividly the celebrations? Now, I'm going to take you back to 1998. This was the finish, the first time you win the great race.
This is a terrific victory, not only for the youth of Australian motorsport. We're watching a changing of the guard here. Two young guys, the 25-year-old Jason Bright, 26-year-old Stephen Richards. This is their first Bathurst win, and Stephen Richards and Jason Bright win the FAI 1000 Classic.
I'm speaking to 49-year-old now, Stephen Richards. So we're winding back to that. Do you remember vividly all of that? Like you ask a league player, remember the tackle, the try, the moments and all of that. But with such a long event, can you relive that race in your head?
Oh, look, I can definitely relive parts, certain parts of it that were significant over the course of the day. You know, in particular, there were quite a few cars that were having tyre failures that day. And while we were very competitive, we were probably running in the top three or four cars all day. There were probably a couple of cars with slightly better pace, but they succumbed to difficulties because of that car speed that they had with the tyres. And we were sitting there, a couple of young blokes. Jason had a quite a nasty crash in practice session just before qualifying, and the Stone Brothers team managed to just get the car out halfway through qualifying. It was still a bit bent and battered, and we managed to qualify 15th. And then then history shows the race was incredible. You know, we were a couple of young guys at a time trying to forge our career, and back then, you know, we talk about V8 touring cars as it was, V8 supercars, but it really was a bit of a changing of the guard. I think 2 years earlier, Craig Lowndes had proved that young guys were actually capable of driving these cars and doing a good job and getting results. But of course, the teams were owned by the legends of the sport, the Dick Johnsons and the Peter Brocks, and it was very, very hard for a young guy to get a foot in the door. It was a bit of a closed shop. So, of course, back then the teams would say, "No, you know, 20-year-old kids, they're not capable of being able to hustle these things around the mountain." But then that in those few years, it really changed a lot, and now we see even more so. We see today that even younger guys are getting their opportunity in their very early 20s to drive in this great racetrack, in this great race, and are more than capable and skillful and talented enough that they can go on and win these races. Fantastic.
Stephen Rich is my special guest. 5 times winner of Bathurst. Dad Jim won it 7 times. As I mentioned, 35 years racing around the Great Circuit, 35 times in Bathurst 1000. Incredible. He's the record holder. A twofold question. Was it ever a burden having to carry the Richards name, given what your dad had achieved? You know, expectation, was that ever a burden? But secondly, how fortunate are you that you got to race with your dad in the Bathurst 1000, co-driver to the great Jim Richards?
It's funny, he's not the great Jim Richards, he's my dad. But look, I think I don't ever recall having that burden. I think I just in my younger years, I just tried to go out there every race I could, whether it was, you know, in the earlier junior categories of Formula Ford and those sorts of things, and just do my best. I never really had that. That I was just happy to be out there car racing, and then one thing led to another, and all of a sudden, you know, you're starting to get results, and then, you know, I think I was fortunate at the time as well, being in that, you know, probably that racing around the time with Craig Lowndes, and then he really opened the door for the young guys probably, so I managed to, you know, get in on my own sort of ability, but I was, don't get me wrong, I was very aware of Dad's achievements and what he was doing, and I was his biggest fan. And probably wanted to replicate the way that I drove in the same way that he did. But it's certainly one of my highlights, Vossie, that, you know, I did get to drive with Dad. We drove at Bathurst 3 times, and we drove against each other many times. You know, there were many times where we actually shared the podium in different teams. You know, I think in 98, I won with Jason Bright, and Dad was third with Jason Barguana. And then in 2002, when Dad won... Yeah, when Dad won his final race with Scafie, I was second on the podium with Russell Ingall. So, you know, you get to share these absolutely incredible sporting moments. You know, while they mean so much to many of the fans and the other drivers, as a driver, you get to share the podium and the biggest motorsport event on the calendar with your dad. And then to top off, we drove together. 3 times in 1997, we finished second, and that was unbelievable. So, I'm very lucky to, and we're very lucky as a sport that generations, fathers and sons, brothers and sisters, if you like, can all drive together in this race. You know, look at the Davisons this year, Alex and Will Davison. They're driving together and are an absolute sure, real shot of claiming victory. Mm. And, you know, wouldn't that be unbelievable to see the two Davison brothers on the top step of the podium at Sunday afternoon?
Hard to top the father-son. I'm just telling you. No, it is a truly great story, and you've told the story so well. And he's just dad. It's not the great Jim Richards. It's my dad. Now, can I ask you this in finishing? That first race victory there at the Bathurst 1000, we're talking 1998. The last victory is 2018. They're not saying this is the young, this is the change of the guard, this is not the young driver crossing the line. Does the same formula win year in, year out? Like 20 years on, was it there a blueprint for winning on this iconic track? And will it still work this Sunday for whoever gets the checkered flag?
Yeah, my mantra on that was always pretty simple. It was all about, you know, making sure that whatever you did during the race, you absolutely had to get the car to that last 30 lap run to the flag. So anything that you did really before that was significant, but you were better off not taking any risks to get there. So my goal, my version of the way you run this race has never changed. I had some pretty good insight through Dad for my whole sort of childhood and teenage years to work it out. But it's really all about getting to that last 30 laps. But there definitely are certain things. It's about reading the race, you know, whether you're a driver or a co-driver, being able to say, okay, this is the time where I need to hold and push on, or this is the time I need to fold and just play my cards close to my chest. And, you know, this is a bit of a difficult period, or the weather's come in, or, you know, now's the time for survival. Or you know, at this period now, we need to move forward, we need to attack. So it's always been a bit that way. The race changes so much throughout the course of the day, whether it's you know, safety car periods or crashes or weather. You know, we know what this place is like with weather. So, but yeah, 2018, the way I thought about that race was pretty similar to the way I thought about it in 1998. Other than the fact that I had a few wins under my belt and the experience.
Yeah, has to count to something. Yep. Steve, it's been a real pleasure catching up with you today, mate. Thanks for all the great moments you and your dad provided us at Bathurst. You can take it on board. You're a household name as well for what you achieved in this great race. Enjoy it on Sunday. Enjoy watching.
Yeah, definitely. We'll do. Thanks, Vossie. And good luck to everyone competing and all the campers up here. We're out the back camping this year, and it's been great.
Good stuff. Stephen Richards, there you go. Five-time winner. And what a story getting to be in the great race with his dad.
You're listening to the best of Vossie.
All righty. This is good news. He's back on the program on a regular basis. He has had one hell of a year, really. And now it's back to the business of the NBL. It's all starting again. Meant to play a couple of warm-up games, sadly, for the Illawarra Hawks. They've both been called off because of COVID. Brian Gorshin is back on the program. Brian, nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be back, yeah. And all the talk last year, and it was a hell of a year last year.
Yes. Okay, listen, Brian, now, just before I get you on the basketball, this topic has reared its head today around the NRL player Brandon Smith, use of blue language. You'd be aware of it. You know, podcasts, it's a different listening audience, we're led to believe. And would you be offended, or would you have a problem with your players on a podcast if it came back to you that their language, you know, using the C-bomb, the F-bomb? Do you think a player has to maintain their integrity at all times, no matter what the forum, when they're making a public appearance?
I think so. You know, I think, again, it's horses for courses. And I know the culture I came out with, the boomers, there was a real focus on everybody that you touch outside of your playing arena, you want a gold vibe with. And that's not gold standard. So, again, I'm not saying for everybody, but what we're trying to do here at the Hawks and what we're trying to do with the boomers, it's not something that we would find acceptable. And I, you know, again, I haven't had to deal with it yet. I haven't had that situation occur, but there was definitely a focus on how you treat people and communicate with people and the respect you have for people outside of your environment.
Yeah, interesting thoughts, Brian. Now, look, I had Paul Smith on the program yesterday, chairman of the Sydney Kings, and I suggested to him that we can't operate on, you know, the way we have last week going forward. We can't be cancelling games during the season. You had a close contact at Illawarra Hawks training last week, then the warm-up game, the blitz game against the Kings get called off. Is it clear in your mind how it's going to work if there's a positive case in the lead-up to a game in the NBL season, Brian?
Well, I think everyone feels like what you're saying and agree 100% with Paul Smith, you know, more NBA style. You get COVID, go to your room, and when you get a positive, come back in. And if somebody else gets it, go to your room, stay in your room. We vaccinated everybody, or trying to. I've had a booster shot. I mean, what's it all about? I mean, we're going to, this thing is going to get passed around and you're going to have to deal with it. So our major, and I think the NBL is coming to grips with that. I think it's going down that path now, and that's going to take place. The complication is here, as opposed to the states, that every state here has different rules. And,
yes.
And the traveling and how you get around making this competition difficult. But again,
100%.
Dealing with COVID is a major piece in this current climate on how your team's going to go.
Yeah, look, I can understand if there's multiple cases. I said this yesterday, and we've got that situation over in Portugal, an extreme example, I know, but yeah, if there's multiple cases, I can understand a game being called off. But in the last couple of weeks, we had Sheffield Shield, a player, suspected to test positive, and so the whole game gets postponed a day. Fully vaccinated players, crowd, if there was any crowd there, they're fully vaccinated. And basketball, it's very disappointing, a game to be called off on the day on a close contact.
Correct.
Which has ended up being a false positive.
It was a false positive.
Just can't operate under those ways. No way.
I agree. And
now,
again, I think change is in progress.
Now, are you one for making predictions, Brian? Do you care to make a prediction for... Yeah, after such a terrific season for the Illawarra Hawks, do you prepare to make a prediction for where they are headed this season?
Well, the controllables were, and the problem with Illawarra has always been they have a good season and all their good players get taken, and they can't follow it up. So the challenge for us was in the off season, the winning's in the picking. Can we put together a team again? And we signed Tyler Harvey back, first team all league. Our young kids' development players, the Sam Frawlings of this world, we signed them back, and we signed an international player in Reese Duop. So we bettered our lineup, and we've come back with a team that we're proud of again. And now the difficulty in answering your question is everyone's added another import, and there's a foreign. When I went to Melbourne, we played two games there in the Blitz before our two were canceled here. There's an exciting foreign element to this. Kids from France, kids from Spain, the best Chinese, best Asian player, an NBA player, Joe Chi, playing at Phoenix. There was a real exciting environment there with those four teams. New Zealand had a French kid, a Spanish kid. I'm getting a lot of calls from the NBA on all these young next stars. So we've improved ourselves, but the league's up.
Yeah, I said to Paul yesterday too, I just think this could be an absolute golden time for basketball, given the presence of the Australians in the NBA. I don't think the NBA's ever been bigger or more followed, and because of the Australian presence there right now, that's from a purely Aussie point of view, to have so many Australian players spread across the NBA, that if the NBL can sort of be dragged along and good coverage, good game, good competitive games, we start putting faces to players' names and that sort of thing. I think it's onwards and upwards for the NBL. And Brian, really looking forward to having a chat with you each week.
Thank you. Great to be back.
You're listening to the best of Vossie.
Of course, we have the one and only Cameron Williams coming on the show. The reason is we needed Cameron. We needed his all-round qualities to talk on a whole range of sports topics. I want to play like fast money around a whole bunch of sports issues. I had five on my piece of card here, and now I've got six, swearing in podcasts. Cameron Williams from Channel 9, welcome to the program. And please, keep your language clean.
Oh, mate, you got your finger on the dump button there. Just be prepared, mate. I've got a few bombs to drop here.
Yeah.
Mate,
well, far away.
I think you're a wonderful bloke, Vossie, and I think you're generally the voice of reason, but you've got it all wrong here with Brandon Smith, mate. I mean, totally upside down.
Right.
I heard you talk about, the responsibilities of broadcasters, et cetera, but the reason people have warmed to the cheese is because he walks that line in these live broadcasts after the game, doesn't he? You never know what he might say.
Personality,
famously
yes.
Mentioning he was heading off, to the pub to have a few once, and that got a lot of notoriety. Look, I swearing aside for a second, I thought that what he said about listening to Mitch Orbison speak in the Roosters Club jersey with tears in his eyes and thinking, God, I want to win a premiership in that jumper, as disrespectful and burning as it was to the Storm, it was the most interesting thing I've heard a footballer say in years, mate. It was real. It was
real. Very interesting. Very interesting. And I'm getting nodding of the head here from Dan number two on the panel. Dan number one's nodding his head as well. This is why we have you on, Cameron. You are here to open up, as we call it, a can of whoop-ass.
And a reason that all the networks jumped on it straight away.
Yes.
Cutting out the swearing because we can't broadcast it. We jumped on it because it was interesting, mate. We knew it would cause this sort of discussion.
Mm. Yep.
And it deserved a wider audience than whatever that podcast was.
Okay, well then there's the first, that topic's done. Well done, Cameron. This is fast money.
Podcasts are a different animal, Vossy. You know,
but
if you
why are they? It's still your integrity, Cameron. At Sportsperson, can you imagine Cameron Smith, Cooper Cronk, Billy Slater using the C-bomb three times in an interview?
No, and they look, they're smarter footballers, aren't they? I think Brandon's on a big learning curve because it'd be naive to say he didn't know the effect it could have because it was a small podcast. The NRL spends millions of dollars a year educating these blokes to try to keep their profile clean. But, you know, maybe the podcast should have edited or beeped the swearing because we all know it happens. And
yep.
We put swearing to air on Channel 9 every night, but we beep it. And I don't know if sanitising it that way is really what the people want.
That's right.
Probably most people feel offended by language, but
yes.
A lot don't.
That's now the seventh issue, the beeping. Should we beep things out? Now, as mentioned to me, the Olympics, of course, we had the F yeah on the pool deck. That's been listed by one of our listeners, Dan. He says, come on, Vostog, that's the sporting moment of the year. So there you go. There is time and place. Okay, so we'll move on from that. Perth.
All right.
I have a hashtag bugger Perth. I'm saying Perth does not get the fifth test. Let's not play this game anymore. Certainly, you're launching the Ashes this week. The fifth test should have been Sydney or Melbourne. Do you agree?
Yeah. Now you're back on track, Vossie, the voice of reason. And I'm pleased to hear you're still on air because at the bolo at Coogee on Saturday night, I heard that Vossie had retired and thrown his shirt into the crowd. And I thought, what? No one deserves that. But it turned out it was Bossy that did that.
Bossy, yeah, that's right. Thank you.
So I misheard over the din of the crowd. But yeah, look, bugger Perth. I'm with you. Hashtag bugger Perth. Because it's absolutely ridiculous that anyone has to go through quarantine twice to play in the sporting
event.
I wouldn't do it if I was the Poms. Even the Aussie players agree that that's one step too far. I like warning MCG as a day-nighter, but you know what would be even better? Have a pink ball test at the SCG.
Yes.
The crowd doesn't have to move. The players don't have to move. The curator would be busy, but let's do it. Back-to-back tests at the SCG.
So we've got the pink test and the pink ball test in Sydney. Well done, Cameron. You're a promoter. You're an ideas man. Now, another one for you on the tennis. And Channel 9, of course, we'll have the Australian Open coverage. Do we make any concessions for Novak? Best in the world to play at the Australian Open, or is it hard and fast we follow government principles here?
Look, it's a political thing to say that if the crowd has to be double vaccinated, so does the player. I mean, he's the world's biggest draw card. He's the world's best player. Would we like him to be at the Australian Open? Yes. Will he put bums on seat? Yes. Does he, is he something that people want to see in action? Yes. If he's clean when he leaves wherever he is to come here, and he's clean when he arrives and does 3 days of isolation like we ask other people to do, what's wrong with letting him play? Dangerous Dan declaring all this stuff for political gain, that doesn't help the Australian Open.
Cameron Williams having his say from Channel 9. That's what we wanted him to do. I need a quick answer on this one because I want to get to your daring prediction for 2022. Steve Smith, are you comfortable back in a captaincy role? He is the vice-captain, which could mean he could be captain at any time if there's an injury to Pat Cummins. Are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with it. I'm a forgiving sort of a bloke, Bossy. It's hard to hang on to hate and anger. And, geez, he went through the mill for what he did. And we still don't know the full story of what happened. But he certainly paid a heck of a price. He's the quasi-vice-captain anyway. It's embarrassing for him not to have a title and see him doing all the field placements anyway. So, come on, let's call it for what it is.
Oh, wow.
I think he's done the time. served the crime, you know, did the crime, served the time, right. Doesn't really deserve any further punishment. And if Pat Cummins is happy to have him as his vice, I think we should all be.
Well said, Cameron Williams. Here's the last one in 20 seconds, because the music's starting to play underneath, and you know we do need to take breaks. A daring prediction for 2022, and I gave this to you as a blank canvas. Just lock one in, Cameron, as Eddie would say.
Oh, okay. You know, I'm a racing man, Vossi. Espiona to win either the Everest or the Cox Plate, but can only win one, so I think they'll go the sprint away. Espiona, the Chris Waller 3-year-old, will be 4 at the time, will win the Everest, currently $15.
There we go. Gamble responsibly, Cameron. Looking forward to seeing you on Channel 9 News. You're a good man. You've opened up that can for our listeners. The whoop ass. Talk to you soon.
Have a double serving, Vossie. See you, mate.
You're listening to the best of Vossie.
We are in cricket and motor racing mode in this half hour of the program because both are very big this weekend. On the cricket front, the Big Bash League starts again this weekend. Sixers v Melbourne Stars for the Sydney Thunder. They play on Monday down at Manuka against the Brisbane Heat. I'm delighted to say I have on the line one of the stars of the Sydney Thunder side, the men in green. Chris Green is on the line. G'day, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Morning, Bossy. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, listen, there's plenty to be inspired by lately in the T20 form of the game. I think the effort of Australia at the World Cup would have got you just itching to get out there to get the Big Bash League underway.
Absolutely. You know, we've been starved of cricket here in Australia for a little while now, and seeing the team lift that trophy and probably enter their first World Cup as underdogs in a long time. You know, you don't hear Australian teams going to cricket World Cups as underdogs. So to watch them go about it and lift that trophy at the end was certainly the excitement kick we needed to get ready for the summer ahead.
Now, Chris, on the personal front, tell me where you have played your cricket this year. And, of course, we're all trying to achieve normality. We had Hayden Kerr on this program a few weeks ago, and him chasing, you know, practice and play during the year took him all over Australia. But what about for you? I guess other parts of the world as well, where you can.
Yeah, look, I was fortunate enough to, the last 2 years, get out of the country and play cricket overseas. This year, I got signed by Middlesex, so I achieved my boyhood dream of playing at Lords. And, you know, that was my first taste of cricket normality again since COVID had hit. I landed in the UK and due to their restrictions I had no quarantine and it was no cricket in a bubble. So you know, to go with playing at Lords, that was quite surreal, given the lay of the land the last 18 months. And then from there I went over to the Caribbean and played in the CPL. So I had 4 months overseas playing cricket as my lead in. I hit my 50th day in locked in a hotel quarantine on return. So that certainly has been a tougher challenge. But for me, it's been a sacrifice, but a sacrifice worthwhile for the cricket opportunities I've been getting.
Yeah, and part of that story, Chris, is the reflection of the cricketer of this age. I mean, you say there, like you played for Jamaica, didn't you? Basically a gun for hire in those competitions. We've had Dan Christian on this show before. I don't know how many different team uniforms he has in his wardrobe, but he's available to play cricket all over the world. I mean, you are in some, well, I guess in many respects, you are living the dream as a pro cricketer.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I could never have imagined the life I'm living, playing cricket all around the world with and against some of my childhood heroes, you know, to share dressing rooms with them in Australia and in different parts of the world and meet new people, experience cricket in different countries across different cultures. You know, it's the same game played and approached very differently all around. So you know, I consider myself very lucky to have done it and continue to do it and hopefully do it for a lot longer. You know, that's the, I guess, the motivation kick that keeps me going and gets me out of bed is I want to play this great game for as long as possible here in Australia and, you know, all around the world as well.
Yeah, Chris Green, my special guest here, one of the more popular players in the Sydney Thunder. Okay, I'll do a little trivia quiz. I don't know whether I've got all the teams. I'm Googling quickly. Rattle off the teams that you've played for in the past 5 or 6 years, all over the country. Can you name them all off the top of your head?
Yeah, this will test me. I know in my 3 years in the Pakistan T20, I had three different teams. So that was Lahore Qalandars, Quetta Gladiators, and Multan Sultan. I've played in the UK for Birmingham Bears and Middlesex.
Right.
Toronto Nationals in Canada. Northern Warriors in the T10. Guyana Amazon Warriors and Jamaica Talawars in the CPL. Sydney Thunder, obviously, in Australia. And I think the last one, and I'm not sure it's there, is I had a cheeky weekend playing for the North Viking Warriors in Norway.
Game, set, match, Chris Green. What, you've had a weekend of cricket in Norway as well. That's amazing.
Yeah, I had to save the best for last for you, Vossi. I was in England. I got a call saying, do you want to go to Norway for the weekend and play some cricket? And I found myself playing against Umar Gul and Misbah Haq in Norway, in Oslo. So,
amazing.
That was a great weekend. And it was, I think we get 23 hours, or we had 23 hours of daylight there in their summer. So it was, it was a brilliant experience.
I hope you got some photos there. Love to see those. You had me at Multan Sultans. I think that's my favourite team that you played for. I want to get myself a Multan Sultan shirt with green across the back. That's my favourite team. Although, mind you, the Guyana Amazon Warriors, they're pretty scary. They creates quite an image.
There's some awesome names going around, and I think those two are easily my favourite names. They're just how elaborate, and they just think roll off the tongue beautifully.
So, Chris, along the way, it's your profession, but do you feel as if in your own performance that your best is still to come? I mean, you're getting this experience all around the world and different playing conditions, and you're put under pressure, you know, day in, day out, playing cricket. Do you think the best is still to come in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm still 28 years young, and the experience I've had at such a young age and in these tournaments is, you know, made me a better player, helped me grow as a person. And, you know, it was only just 2 years ago where I suffered a ban and had to sit out of the game for 3 months, and COVID knocked that back a further 3 months. So I had a six-month training block in the prime of my career, if you like, and I'm still wanting to reap the rewards and the fruition from that training block. You know, started really, really well the last 18 months, and I want to continue to grow further and continue to come back bigger and better. And that's my goal, contributing to all the teams I play for. And, you know, I've got my sights firmly set on lifting that trophy once again with the Sydney Thunder.
Yeah. And just in your efforts with Middlesex, was a hat-trick in the mix there too during the year?
It was. There was a cheeky hat-trick. I somehow burgled it. Owen Morgan had me bowling the last over of the match a couple of times, and you know, it worked sometimes it didn't, but in this match it worked really well. So it was great playing alongside Owen again. I've spent a lot of time with him, and you know, I think he's comfortably the best white ball captain currently in the game. See what he's done with England, you know, firstly with Trevor Bayliss, but then now himself and all the teams he plays for. He's a fantastic leader, and he decided to bowl me at the death, and it obviously it worked really well.
Yeah, now on the focus on Sydney Thunder, and as I say, kicking off Monday against the Brisbane Heat, the first game, I must say, really excited last week. It was Tanvi Sanger with the leg spins coming along, and I know we're talking different form of the game, but you get to see him up close. How talented, 19 years of age, how talented is he?
Yeah, he's something special. I think what impressed me most about his year last year, his debut season, and his successful debut season, was how calm and collected he was under pressure and at the top of his mark. You know, he was bowling to some of the biggest names in the game. Being a leg spinner and being a spinner in the shortest form, you find yourself bowling to the big batters in the opposition, and he thrived under pressure. He really enjoyed the challenge, and he succeeded more often than not. So he's gone away since last Big Bash, and he's been travelling with the Aussie group, learning off the likes of Zampa and Agar, traveling the world, and now, you know, getting regular appearances with New South Wales alongside that pretty good spinner called Nathan Lyon. So he's going to be better for it, and I'm really excited to be a part of, you know, his team and continue to follow his career and enjoy my new win at the other end. He's going to be really good for us and play a big role again.
Well, can't wait for it all to start again. 1170 SEN with coverage of the Big Bash League. And Chris, look forward to you become a dynamic performer. You become part of our summer with Big Bash on pretty much every night bar Christmas. And maybe that's not too far away. There will be a Christmas Day game as well. Chris, all the very best for the season. You've had an incredible year again, cricket all around the world, including Norway. May I say you're the first guest I've had on that's played sport of any kind, I think, in Norway, but certainly cricket. That is an absolute doozy. Well done.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's certainly one of those feather in your cap moments. But no, thanks for having me, and we're really excited to see fans back in stadiums, particularly our Thunder Nation in Canberra and in Sydney. So bring on the summer ahead.
Yeah, well said, well said. The fans, let's hope it's normality. Omicron doesn't get in the way and all the rest. We can get back to normal. Good on you, Chris Green. What a talent. What a good personality too. What about that? Chris Green played cricket in Norway. And that's all in this special Saturday edition of Breakfast with Vossie. Don't forget to tune into the show on Monday from 6 a.m. on 1170 SEN or via the SEN app.